So for a not insignificant portion of my life, it was actually my job to be charming and adored. It was literally in my job description to put on pretty costumes and get clapped for on a daily basis. And being an overly dramatic, overly emotional 22-year-old, I thought being an actress in the city of Chicago was the best thing that I could possibly do with my life. It felt like a perfect fit. Until a 23-year-old jazz guitarist broke my heart, as 23-year-old jazz guitarists are wont to do. And being an overly dramatic, overly emotional 22-year-old, I thought that there was not enough space in the city of Chicago for he and I to be in the same place, even with 4.5 million other people there. So I called my best friend, and she was currently visiting her mother in southern Mississippi. Her mother was doing Katrina rehab work. And I said, "I have to leave." And she said, "Come down here. Come to Mississippi for a little while. Take a week off." I thought, okay, well, I can go to the beach, or go to the beach, or maybe read a book on the beach. So I took a Greyhound down to southern Mississippi, right on the Gulf. And I fell asleep on the Greyhound, and as I woke up, I saw the glistening Gulf. We were going along the water's edge on a road, and there were these beautiful beachfront homes that had been built up, and I thought, well, why is anyone doing rehab work? This is amazing, it looks great. Until we turned off of the road where the beachfront property was to the place where people lived who couldn't afford beachfront property. And there were people living with no running water and tarps for roofs. And it was 2 years after the storm. But I was there to go to the beach. So I went to the volunteer center and met up with my friend. But the spirit works in strange, strange ways, because there was another person from my home state of Michigan who had, he was a construction worker, and he had given up his entire business to go down to Mississippi to do rehab work. And I was like, "Adam, it's great to see you. How are you doing?" And Adam looked like he was not doing fantastic that particular day. And he said, "Julie, all of our labor at this point is volunteer, and all of our building materials are donation-based. And this week, I have 13-year-old Girl Scouts as my labor. And I have drywall in Alabama that needs to be picked up, and none of them can drive, and I can't leave the site. Will you take my truck and go to Alabama and pick up this drywall? Because we're trying to get this house built so this woman doesn't have to give birth in a FEMA trailer." And I thought, man, I am not going to enjoy the beach if it is at the expense of pregnant ladies and Girl Scouts. So I went to Alabama and I picked up the drywall. And the next day there was something else to do. And the next day there was something else to do. And the day after that, and the day after that, until I woke up every morning not thinking about going to the beach, but getting really excited to go to a construction site. It turned out that the salt block of grief that had welled up in my body didn't need to come out in tears. It needed to come out in sweat. And I have to tell you, I never thought that I could be happy anywhere that didn't have public transportation and a Democratic voting record. But something about Mississippi just sang to my soul. I guess my soul really likes the most beautiful sunsets you've ever seen, and mediocre banjo music, and fresh caught catfish served with greens picked from someone's garden that day. A week later, when my friend returned to Chicago, I knew I couldn't go with her. I called my job, and I called my apartment, management company. And even though I knew I would be homeless and unemployed when I returned to Chicago, I told them I was going to stay in Mississippi for as long as I needed to stay, because I just knew that I did. And I got a spot in the church to sleep on a cot. And I, still being an overly dramatic, overly emotional 22-year-old, I tried to make my life like a movie montage. Every night I'd go into the sanctuary and I'd sing at the top of my lungs, and I'd go out into the pavement of the parking lot and have dance parties with the bullfrogs. And I actually did make it to the beach. I made it to the beach in the morning to watch the sun rise, and I would sit there and I would make promises to God. I felt so good and so fulfilled that I told God if I could hang on to that feeling, I would become as expansive as that sky, and as deep as that ocean, and as bright as that rising sun. And I was happy. I was really happy for a time. I spent 5 months there. Until one day I went back to the construction site, and Adam seemed to be experiencing some of his consternation. He came up to me and he said, "Julie, we have AmeriCorps workers this week." And I said, "Well, those are some of the good ones. That's good." He said, no, we're building the roof this week, Julie. You see, the last week we had built these giant trusses. You know what a truss is? It's that triangular part that goes on top of the square that makes the roof. So we didn't have any cranes or any materials to lift them up. So we built these giant trusses on the ground, and the plan was to stand them up on their edge and tip them over the roof and have somebody over here sort of like catching them and nailing them in. But the thing was, AmeriCorps workers were not allowed to be 30 feet off the ground unless they were harnessed into something that was 10 feet above their head already, and there was nothing above their head if we were building the roof. So Adam said, "My plan is I'm just going to have you catch just one of them, and then you nail it in, and then Brian, who's literally a lumberjack and runs through trees for a living, can get up and do the rest of them. But you just need to do that one so he can harness himself into that one." And I was like, "What?" If Adam had noticed anything about me over the last few months, it was that I didn't climb ladders. I didn't nail things in that were high up off the ground, and I certainly didn't catch roofs. And he wanted me to stand on a 2x4, because mind you, this house was 30 feet off the ground on hurricane stilts, and then two floors, and there was nothing there except a 2x4 for me to balance on. That was not happening. It was not happening. Until Adam reminded me of the pregnant woman. And I thought, oh man. It took me 3 eternities to climb up onto that roof. One to actually climb the ladder. Another one to transfer myself from the ladder to a clinging position on to the 2x4. And another to just stand up. It took me an entire eternity to just stand up. And by this time, Adam was feeling really impatient. So he yelled, "All right, catch." And I looked up, and there was this thing that was impossibly large coming at me. I must have somehow done something that allowed Brian, the lumberjack, to then get up and finish the rest of the trusses in the amount of time that it took me to do that one. But all I remember next was being on the ground, just laying on the ground, and feeling this giant sense of release. And it wasn't so much a sense of relief or letting go of fear or even accomplishment. It was like this sense of surrender. Because I was laying there, cradled in the Mississippi mud, with the southern sun shining down on me. And I felt so connected to all of it. And I knew that I couldn't ever be as deep as the ocean or as expansive as the sky or as bright as the rising sun because I wasn't separate from any of it. And I looked up at these people. I looked up at these people who had given up their lives to build a beloved community. And I knew that that's what I wanted to spend the rest of my life doing. But it took me years to go to seminary. Years. Because there was this word that kept getting in the way. Minister. This word that meant that what I had been called by God to do something that other people hadn't been called to do, that one day I would be up here and other people would be over there, that my voice was somehow privileged or special, and I couldn't get a hold of that thought. And yet the only place in the world that I had ever seen beloved community built the way that I needed it to be built, the way that I knew I was called to help build laying in that mud, was in my church. So I went to seminary and I asked these questions, and it turned out there was a philosopher, a theologian, who had written down everything I thought. It was very nice of him. He did it all before I was even born. His name was Alfred Whitehead, and he wrote about something called process theology, that we are all part of a process that is ongoing and unfolding in this world. So something happened, he said. Something happened. First matter, the creative spark of life, the Big Bang. God, if you will. Something happened. And everything that happens after that, be it human evolution or biology or thought and idea, everything that happens after that is connected to this first thing and influences everything else that will happen. And everything that happens after that is connected to the next thing. So everything that has ever been influences everything that will ever be, and we are all connected in this sort of giant quantum entanglement. And one of the things that happened along that way on that web was you. So everything that has ever been culminated in your existence. And everything that you do will affect everything that will ever happen. And that sounds like a whole lot of responsibility, but it also sounds like a whole lot of agency. Because you're the only one. You are the only one with your set of perspectives and life experience. You are the only one that knows exactly what you know, and you are the only one that sees exactly what you see, and the spectrum of humanity would be incomplete without you. And this is what I learned about ministry, that we're all ministers. I went to school to learn to create beloved community. And the best way for me to do that, I found, is to do a job that is commonly recognized with the word minister. But that doesn't mean that that's all that ministry is. Ministry is anything you do that is intentional to put more love and purpose into that web, into that entanglement. And because you are precisely you, and no one else can be. The world needs your ministry. I'll say it again. The world needs your ministry. The world needs your ministry. And maybe you know what that is and you do it every day and it's terribly fulfilling. And maybe you're still trying to figure out what makes you fulfilled and needed and happy at the same time. And that's okay. You're in a really good place to do that this morning. Church is a really good place to do that. And maybe your ministry is taking care of children to feed the next generation of our planet. And maybe your ministry is crocheting to make more beautiful things in the world. And maybe your ministry is doing something administrative with soul and spirit and putting love and intention into what would otherwise be a bureaucratic job. But whatever your ministry is, follow it, find it, think about it. Because the world does need who you are. And I think it is one of our most sacred jobs as human beings to find what we are called to be. It's scary. It can be ambiguous, and I don't have perfect knowledge around how to find your true calling. But I do know the universe speaks. And I can give you the only piece of advice that I've seen work over and over again when people are faced with following their calling. Just put your hands up and get ready to catch something larger than you can possibly imagine catching. And then surrender. Just surrender. Blessings on your journey, my friends.